I'm feeling a certain level of trepidation, hesitation, you know, avoidance, fear, whatever it is, that's the place to lean into because it's my next level.
Imposter syndrome is a byproduct of kind of fear and challenging and stretching yourself, right? If you don't have a good dose of that, then are you really challenging yourself?
Welcome to Think Deeply, Speak Simply, brought to you by Presentium, a show about the art and science of communicating ideas and how everyday leaders unlock their careers with great communication. And now, here's your host, Jay Rook.
Symptoms of imposter syndrome include decreased self-confidence, comparing oneself to others, negative self-talk, and a whole host of other limiting beliefs. When they go unchecked, these feelings can prevent us from reaching our goals and advancing our careers. As such, learning how to conquer imposter syndrome is an essential stepping stone of our personal advancement. But as you'll hear from today's guests, it may not be conquered in the manner you think. In this episode, our guests teach us that the first key to taking down imposter syndrome is to embrace the phenomenon. Today, we are joined by Magali Rene, the CEO of Workplace Catalyst, a company which helps develop and foster compassionate leaders. Our next guest is Sako Mbui, who is a medical operations lead with AbbVie. Both guests are trained leaders and public speakers who, having experienced imposter syndrome in their own lives, learn how to turn it into a positive and prevent it from holding them back. Each expert will share thought-provoking and tactical solutions on how you can start conquering imposter syndrome and not be a victim to the fear. With that, let's hear from our guest. Let's welcome Magali Rene to the show. Magali, welcome.
Hi, Jay. It's great to be here. How are you?
I am very good as well and very happy to have you here. Magali, you're a transformational business coach, author, CEO, and founder of Workplace Catalyst, which is a professional coaching and workplace training firm. Can you tell us a bit about why you gravitated to this line of work?
Yes, absolutely. So my background has been, I've had a very personal story around imposter syndrome and breaking through that, conquering that, and really tapping into radical compassion to do so. And that is really the foundation of our business. Workplace Catalyst is the future of work is compassionate. So everything that we do really rests on that idea that we are compassionate leaders. And certainly it started from with my personal story.
Gotcha. And you know, so you're describing this compassionate working as the future of the workforce. Can you talk about what compassionate working means to you and what makes it such an industry disruptor?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we are all leaders, right? No matter where we are in the hierarchy of our companies, even in our lives, you can be a mom and maybe you're a stay-at-home mom or a parent. You're still the leader of your life, no matter what you're doing. And so as I think about leadership in all aspects, I think about compassionate leadership. And what that means is really bringing the human element to whatever it is you're doing, honing in on those, I like to call them essential skills, even though a lot of people call them soft skills, but those are the skills that elevate us. They make us able to relate to anyone, connect to people on a deeper level, and really inspire our kids, the people around us, people in our workplace, whether they're our coworkers, our colleagues, our team members, our managers even. It's what helps us make an impact, really, is compassionate leadership.
Amen to that. I love everything you just said. That was beautifully said. As a compassionate leadership expert, we feel that you'd be a great fit to discuss today's theme, which is all about conquering imposter syndrome. How have you experienced imposter syndrome and how did you overcome it?
Yeah, you know, I love this question. I love it so much because even though I have a very specific reason and history around how imposter syndrome has affected me as a woman of color, as a first generation American, I've gone into so many spaces with a plethora of individuals from all kinds of backgrounds, all levels of leadership. I mean, you name it, I've experienced it in these huge settings. And every time I ask who has dealt with imposter syndrome, the entire room raises their hand, like with the exception of maybe one or two people. And probably because I've said imposter syndrome and they're like, what's that? Right. So it affects everyone. And at some stage of their career, in their life, for me, and there's different reasons, right? And I think that's the powerful aspect of intersectionality. There are places where we come from different backgrounds and lived experiences. There are places where those things meet and other places where there are disparities for obvious reasons. And so personally, it came from my background. I was raised in a neighborhood that was not predominantly people of color. And I was one of three people of color in my grade, pretty much all through elementary school, right? It was a predominantly Polish, Irish, Italian neighborhood. It was the 80s. If you've seen comedies in the 80s, you can imagine how it was. So I had a lot of bullying that was very racially motivated, right? Really sad and distressing and all the things, traumatic. And then I would go to summer school and I would be in, or not summer school, but I'd go to camp and I'd be in a predominantly African-American and Hispanic and Latin American neighborhood. And then I would get a lot of bullying because I didn't sound Black enough, or I sounded like a quote unquote, like a white person. I sounded like an Oreo, all these kinds of things, right? All of these stereotypes, super damaging, but that's what affected me in terms of feeling like I wasn't worthy, wasn't good enough. And then of course I have the next level, which is my parents, they're immigrants and they're like, you got to get straight A's across the board all the time, right? So that level of, if you bring a home a B, that's a failure. And that's kind of my personal story on what created this feeling or sense that I wasn't ever ready enough, prepared enough, smart enough. I didn't have enough degrees, you know, initials behind my name, you name it, at every stage of the game in my career, it showed up in different ways. So that's what's created it for me. I overcame it by embracing it. And I know that sounds counterintuitive, but I've realized that fear is something that is going to occur. So that's the bad news to everyone who's listening. You may never, ever get over your imposter syndrome, right? And just beginning at that place had me change the dynamic and my relationship to it. So now instead of being, you know, thrown off by fear, I know that if I'm feeling a certain level of trepidation, hesitation, you know, avoidance, fear, whatever it is, that's the place to lean into because it's my next level. So if I'm not experiencing some level of imposter syndrome, I feel like I'm not pushing myself enough. I am not challenging myself to reach some new goal that I might have. So really it's redesigning my relationship with fear.
So Magalie, you talked earlier about radical compassion, and can you talk a little bit about what you view that to be and how we can use that to reduce imposter syndrome?
Yeah, so imposter syndrome shows up for so many people in so many different ways in the workplace, and especially for managers and even executives, particularly if they're women, particularly if they're people of color, and even more so if they're both people and women of color, right? Just like it does affect everyone. And I think at the end of the day, what I've personally learned that I think is a very powerful tip that most people may not know is that we are very hard on ourselves. Those of us who experience imposter syndrome, who feel like we're not good enough or feel like a fraud at different points in time, we're very hard on ourselves. And so I didn't really begin to be able to embrace my fear and move forward anyways, right? Do it anyway, until I stopped beating myself up and being so hard on myself. That's where radical compassion comes in. Even in those moments where I'm avoiding and I procrastinate because I'm so scared to actually do this thing, in those moments, I say, it's okay. It's normal for you to feel this way. You can procrastinate, do what you need to do. And I kind of diffuse all that pressure that I put on myself. And once I started to practice this in real life over and over again, all of a sudden the procrastination lessened because I wasn't like rebelling against myself, if that makes sense. And I was just more loving and kind to myself. If you had a child and you wanted to encourage them to do something that they were afraid of, how would you be with them? You would encourage them. You wouldn't beat them up. So you've got to, radical compassion is seeing yourself through that lens, being with yourself like you're a child. And then also, I'd say connecting that with acknowledgement. This is another pro tip for breaking through imposter syndrome, is you've got to acknowledge everything, the little things, the middle-sized things, and the big things. We tend to only think we're good enough when these monumental things happen in our careers, our workplaces, our lives. No, you get to congratulate yourself. I mean, people go through this depression. You know, I did. And I got to a point where I was celebrating brushing my teeth. Like, I'm going to own that. You've got to celebrate all of the little things along the way, because that's enjoying the journey. And that builds up your confidence. It's just like a muscle. You've got to practice acknowledgement.
Outstanding answer. Thank you. You've mentioned that you were the subject of racially motivated bullying as a child. Can you talk about how this may have influenced you to take up the calling that you're currently pursuing?
Absolutely. I think, you know, when you're othered in any way, made to feel like you are less than because of what you look like, right? The color of your skin, how you speak, whatever it might be. And for me, it was certainly racial, very specifically, right? The size of my nose, the size of my lips, it was extreme. And when you are put in that position, it's a different type of trauma. And it's just as bad as being, you know, very badly abused. It's a form of abuse. And so I think people that have gone through, if anybody's listening who's experienced anything like that or can relate to what I'm talking about, first of all, I see you and I am relating to you and connecting with you. And also, it teaches us, those of us who have really experienced that, we have a choice. We can either pour that back out into the world and throw that onto other people, blame others, damage others, right? Pour out our hurt people. Or we can make the choice, which is difficult sometimes, certainly takes a lot of discipline. We can make the choice to be more compassionate. And that's the choice that I make every day, is to become the kind of person who would never do to others what was done to me, and who would instead be lifting up anyone and everyone that I engage with.
Well said. Thank you. This is a question we ask of all of our guests on the show. Do you think great business communication is more of an art or science, and why?
Oh, I think, I don't know, an art and a science. I think it's a skill. I'm going to kind of skip that. I think it's an art and it's a science, right? And I think it's something that anyone can develop. So it's something anyone can develop. And I would probably lean towards art, because I believe everyone is creative. So whether you see yourself as creative or not, if you've ever had a thought, you are creative. So certainly if we look at it as an art, then it's possible for everyone to develop their communication skills.
Excellent. What advice would you have for aspiring business leaders who want to improve their communication?
I'd say, believe that you can. Start there. Set the intention that you're going to be the best communicator ever. And if you set that intention, and if you begin to believe that it's possible, then do the work behind it, right? So the work is the last part. And of course, there are many, many, many different tools. I'm sure this is one of the great podcasts around those topics that people can learn from. So be willing to learn from everyone. And personally, how did I develop my speaking skills? Practice taking action on it. So you've got to do it even when it feels really awful and you think you might die in front of that.
Yeah, totally. And where can listeners go to learn more about you, connect, consume your content, et cetera?
Absolutely. They can find me on LinkedIn. So it's Magalie Renee. You'll find me there, MAGALIERENE. And on Instagram, Magalie_Renee, MAGALIE_RENE. And I deliver content on Instagram quite often, pretty consistently. I'm proud of that. And so I'd love to connect with you on LinkedIn or Instagram, and of course on Facebook.
Excellent. Well, Magalie, on behalf of myself and all of our listeners, just want to say thank you for coming on the show today and providing the thoughtful answers to our questions and having this conversation.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Jay. It was great to be here.
Before we move on to our next guest, let's hear from our amazing sponsor, Presentium.
Do you spend way too much time creating presentations at work? Do you hate the hassle of creating polished presentations for work? If so, I've got an opportunity for you to reclaim your time, reduce your stress, and make your ideas shine. Think Deeply, Speak Simply is brought to you by Presentium. Presentium makes overnight presentations for enterprise customers at a fraction of the cost of design firms and agencies. They have made over 1 million slides and are trusted by thousands of enterprise customers. It is super easy to use. Just email Presentium a rough draft of your slides by 5:30 p.m., and you'll receive a beautifully crafted presentation in your inbox by 9:30 the next morning. Put Zen in your presentations, reclaim your time, and let your ideas shine. To learn more, visit Presentium.com. That's P-R-E-Z-E-N-T-I-U-M.com. And now back to the show.
And with that, let's welcome Sukun Bui to the show. Sukun, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Jay. Thanks for having me.
We're thrilled to have you here. Today's episode is all about conquering imposter syndrome. When we do experience imposter syndrome, where do you believe it arises from?
I actually kind of view it as a positive from the perspective of any opportunity that came in my kind of career journey. I necessarily didn't view it as a good opportunity if I didn't have fear going into it. And I think that imposter syndrome is a byproduct of kind of fear and challenging and stretching yourself, right? If you don't have a good dose of that, then are you really challenging yourself? Now, that being said, it can go too far to the extreme where it becomes debilitating, where you're so in disbelief of your ability to do something that you start to believe it, right? Mm-hmm. I think if you kind of spin it into, yes, it's initial fear, but I can attack the learning curve, then I think it helps kind of foster growth and kind of pushes and challenges you.
Great answer. What are some of the symptoms we experience or witness in others that provide awareness that we may be caught in imposter syndrome?
I think some of the signals are really hesitation to make decisions. I think overanalyzing things and now, you know, trying to draw multitude of opinions to arrive at decisions, just layers of bureaucracies to put in place to arrive at decisions. I think those are all kind of red flag, especially if you're a very senior leader that has that syndrome and you've kind of taken it to the extreme where it's the whole adage of paralysis by analysis, right? So I think those are some of the cues, especially if you're very high up in the organization that's responsible for directing teams. At some point, you need to draw a line in the sand and say, I collected the information that I have and make decisions, right? And that's what sets the good business from the bad business, right? At the end of the day.
Excellent. Yes. And for those individuals that are in that spot where they're moving into a next evolution of themselves and are experiencing some of that initial fear that you were describing, what's your advice for them on how to navigate through that?
I think one of the best advice that I was given was not just focus on deep expertise in your educational background and your previous work background. It's the whole team mentality of development, right? It's good to build that depth, but it's also good to kind of horizontally build different, you know, subject matter expertise. And there's ways of building that tea out, right? And the advice that I was given that I still hold strongly with me and in future decisions is don't be afraid to kind of put your foot in the water. And although it may be cold initially, your body temperature adjusts, right? And I think that mentality has kind of carried with me through different roles that I've taken on, whether it's the current one that I have taken now where I had no previous background on. And then really using much of the answers to previous questions that I shared with you to really learn the analogy of flying the plane while designing it, right? And that's through just having a good sense of fear going into that role. So good sense of imposter syndrome that led me to deeply, you know, listen to my team members, cascade trust and allow them to be decision makers. And then I'm learning the business as we go too, where after a certain point in time, I can also pressure test some of those decision makings with different insights from previous experience, now layer with the current experience, right? So it becomes like compounded interest, you get what I say, when you build out that horizontal experience with different functional expertise.
Great answer. This is a question we ask of all the guests on the show. Do you think great business communication is more of an art or science, and why?
Oh, that's a good question. At least from my perspective, I believe it's an art. And I say that because I think early on in my career, I truly was horrible at it. And whether it's over-preparing and then being very prescriptive in terms of how I presented something, or going the full gamut and just say, okay, I'm getting stuck and paralyzed up front because I've overprepared, less underprepare, and then just not be ready for the answer to a question, right? And at some point, just by doing, I've gathered, you know, experience on how I can, you know, meet in the middle somewhere to the point where I'm prepared just enough. I think a good mentality that I've learned through that journey is when you think about what you're trying to communicate, what story are you trying to tell? Once you know what story you're trying to tell, then don't ask the question of what information am I missing out? You should ask the question is, what information should I leave out? Because I think the latter gets you to more of a tight package story that's really anchored what your, you know, objective is for the storytelling or communication to whatever, you know, stakeholder. Where in the past, I would think about what information am I missing out? Then I would just kind of fill my brain with so much information, or like my slide decks with so much information, that it waters down the message, or it opened doors to other concerns that necessarily wouldn't have been open if I would have just left out certain information, right? And it's being able to just hit that sweet spot of what to include and package in your communication. And then if questions come out of it, then you double click into it as needed, right? But don't come to the table with everything and try to explain everything under the sun, right? So that's probably one of the best things I've learned. And I was a horrible communicator, whether it was written or orally, it was across the board where I just kind of over-communicated. So I think it's an art from the perspective of you learn as you do. And I picked up different tips and tricks along the way. And not just by learning and doing, I think it's observing people and identifying people that are good at it. It's like, okay, I see how when he paused there, how the audience reacted and how it then allowed him to segue into something else by him reading the room, right? And just letting them a few seconds to marinate the information and then be able to quickly pivot off of that. That was like a big aha moment. It's just observing other people doing it and then being comfortable with like silence in between too.
Great show. Thank you for that. And final question, what advice would you have for aspiring business leaders who want to improve their communication?
I would really continue to piggyback off my answer. For me, because it's an art, it's learning by doing. Prior to just like putting my feet in the water and just being fearless and going out there and presenting, I think I tried to read up on different books and took different courses that were offered through our company. And although they were great tidbits here and there, it really didn't give me confidence to, you know, present and speak. Like, I would never imagine myself like 10 years ago, you know, coming here to talk about this, right? Because I probably would have froze literally most of the questions. So I think my advice is to just put yourself out there and allow you to have the opportunity to present in whatever size audience, whether it's in a small meeting room, whether it's on a stage in front of multiple departments, whatever the case may be, and insert yourself in projects that allow you to refine those communication skills, whether it's as a team, whether it's a lead of a project management team or just a team member, you're still communicating with each other and collaborating, right? Versus isolating yourself to a role that is focused on single person deliverables, right? Because leadership is really about, you know, influencing without direct authority at the end of the day. And you can only do that by being able to concisely communicate what you want the team to kind of execute and achieve. So yeah, in short, just put your feet in the water and present, and you know, put yourself in projects that gives you that exposure at the end of the day.
Second, on behalf of myself and all of our listeners, just want to say thank you so much for your time today. I really enjoyed this conversation and all of your thoughtful answers.
Thank you, Jay, and nice meeting you, and thank you for having me.
As long as we're growing, learning, and trying new things, we may never be fully free of imposter syndrome. That's why our guests recommend that we embrace it as a positive and thrust ourselves further into the area that is causing those feelings of anxiety. In doing so, we can trust it as an indicator that we're taking the necessary steps for ourselves and our businesses to grow. To do this, Magalie says that you must first be compassionate towards yourself. When she stopped beating herself up and transformed the tone of her inner critic into one that is more kind and supportive, she was able to sit with the fear and proceed anyways. She also reminds us that the key to enjoying the process is to take note of the small, day-to-day personal victories and then reward ourselves for our growth. Sakon observes that he uses the feelings of imposter syndrome to gauge whether an opportunity is a worthwhile one, stating that if he didn't have fear and anxiety to begin with, it likely wasn't a big enough next step. In order to prevent the fear from becoming paralyzing, however, Sakon says that the solution lies in the right amount of preparedness, that is, prepare enough to ease the anxiety, but be careful of slipping into over-preparation. I particularly appreciate how today's guest broke down imposter syndrome with candor and vulnerability, teaching us that it's not a phenomenon to be avoided, but rather navigated and broken through. On behalf of our amazing sponsor, Presentium, and executive producer, Rajat Mishra, thank you for listening to this episode of Think Deeply, Speak Simply. I'm your host, Jay Rook, and if you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the podcast, and we'd love it if you would rate and review the show. Until next time, think deeply and speak simply.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Think Deeply, Speak Simply. To learn more about the art and science of communicating ideas, visit our thought leadership library at presentium.com.